Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon and welcome to The Aware Show. Hi, this is Lisa Garr. Das, he sparked a spiritual revolution. It was 40 years ago that book was written. And since then, he has been an amazing guiding light for millions and millions of people on their spiritual path. His latest book is Be Love Now. So he had three. First one was Be Here Now. And then the second one was Still Here, which I love. And then Be Love Now is his latest book. And Ram Dass is joining us now on The Aware Show. Again, thank you so much for joining me, Ram Dass.
Certainly.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you with me. So, first of all, you are residing in Maui now, yes?
That's correct.
And are you calling me now from, are you in Maui now calling me?
Yes, I am.
No, you are so lucky.
I'm an island boy.
I am an island girl stuck in a city, I'll tell you that. Well, now let's just go back to, if you can, your teachings. And when you traveled to India and you sat with your guru Maharaji, what message did he give you at the time that you were destined to carry out throughout the world?
Well, what message did he give?
The message that drives you now, that you are imparting to all of us, that we are, that we learn from you.
The message of bhakti yoga. It's a message of the heart. It's a message of love, compassion, and the message transmitted by Hanuman, the god who shows the approaching god through service.
Mm-hmm. And you have since then been in service basically to Maharaji and his word and his message that he gave you and to basically everyone else.
Yep.
Yeah. And when you reach that place, when you are traveling around the world and when you are speaking and when you are teaching, do you notice that people are more disconnected from that space of their heart than ever before, or they're more connected to their heart than ever before? Do you notice a difference these days?
I think they're less in their hearts. And part of the Western cultures are busy being the head and the body.
Busy being the head and the body and not being so much of the heart.
Yeah.
Why do you think that has happened? And do you think that's changed from, say, the 60s, 70s?
Boy, it sure is a change.
It sure has changed?
Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
Well, it's partly just a pendulum swing. This is a reaction to the 60s and the reaction to the heart space in the 60s.
That was wide open?
Yeah.
Why do you think that it's closed off now and more recently?
It closed off out of fear. And to the culture was they were afraid the psychedelic drugs and mysticism, and they were afraid to leave the rational mind behind them. And nowadays, the rational mind...
We've latched onto it so much more now, haven't we?
So much.
Yeah. Yeah, so much more. So I understand. So it's kind of a backlash from the 60s to now, and where we are, I mean, with the fast-paced world that we live in and the rise in technology and our attention being split in so many different directions at so many different times,
it feels like the path that we're headed down is just going to continue to make things faster and faster and more convenient. And
yeah,
so,
I think,
you think so too?
It's now information prevalent rather than love.
That's true. We're being driven towards information rather than love. Very interesting.
But that's not the internet and things like that are not all bad. It's bringing us together.
Yeah, in an interesting way. It's a double-edged sword.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
it right. is, definitely. I didn't actually bring this up until now, but when you had a stroke several years ago, I heard you say that you are more at peace now than ever, at least at the time of the stroke. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah. I think that nowadays I concentrate on peace, on contentment, and love.
And how do you do that when you... focusing on peace and contentment and love, as opposed to before your stroke, your focus wasn't there so much?
Well, I don't have opportunities like I had. I used to drive a sports car and golf. I built my golf swing, and I don't with a stroke. Those things are out.
Even as a spiritual teacher, you were doing all of that.
Yeah.
And you feel that the stroke was a way of really reconnecting you with the
most...
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. It was very much...
a gift?
A gift of grace.
Explain what you mean by that.
Well, when I was in the hospital with the stroke, all the people around me were, how terrible of you, stroke. And after that, I started to see that it also could be positive, and that my stroke could be grace, and from my guru, and it was I had to be silent for a while because of the stroke. I started to learn how to be dependent, which up until then I was very independent.
In your mind, can you process and hear more things than ever before because of your stillness? Do you actually feel that you're more perceptive now than you were before the stroke?
Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, it's down in the heart. I can, a spiritual heart, which loving awareness, and that becomes me. That becomes who I am. Loving awareness down in the heart. And I, because I'm identified with the awareness, I'm very much aware of my environment, my body, my thoughts, nature, people around me. I'm witnessing those things, and I become the witness of my incarnation.
Do you become closer to those things now than you maybe most of us would just walk by a beautiful flower, but now you can spend the time to contemplate?
Because I am subjectively experiencing that flower rather than objectively experiencing that flower. And I become the flower.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was thinking. You become the flower. You don't take it for granted. You
That's
don't
right.
just expect there to be millions more like it. You become the flower.
Yep.
Were you, as a child, were you always very perceptive, very aware? Did you feel
no.
different? No, you the opposite?
No. I didn't start to become perceptive until the psychedelics came along.
And what did that make you want to do the psychedelic drugs even more?
Psychedelics showed me mysticism, and it showed me the oneness of things, and it showed me that I was not my roles.
That you
it
were
showed
not.
Showed me that it was my I was my soul.
Mm. I remember you did a lot of work with Timothy Leary, and even Raymond Moody. I don't know if you had ever worked with him as well, but in the experience of exploring near-death experiences, life after life, that the levels that you were able to see in were so much deeper. Can you get this effect without the drugs, do you think?
Yes. In fact, I have been, ever since I've gone to India, I've found that those experiences are transmitted from heart to heart. My gurus showed me those experiences in me, and now I now think that those experiences are not the drugs. They're inside all of us.
Do you ever regret doing those psychedelic drugs, or at the level that you did?
No, because they opened my door to mysticism. They took me from being a boxed-in psychologist to now a mystic.
Interesting. So they took you out of your mind.
Yes.
Into your experiences. Do you believe that those experiences led you to find your guru?
What did you say?
Did the experiences of doing the research with the psychedelic drugs eventually lead you to sitting with your guru, Maharaji?
Yeah, it definitely led me. I think that plus the Tibetan Book of the Dead and a few books like the Bhagavad Gita that were very, very deep within my soul, and I realized that the East had a lot of maps of consciousness that I wanted, because I was fooling with consciousness with psychedelics.
I see. So that was what piqued your curiosity, essentially. You found
that's
the same.
That's just what it did.
Mm-hmm. And so you basically found that same experience through sitting with your guru and through the meditation that you did through the psychedelic drugs.
That's correct.
Without the drugs.
Yep.
And do you think that in any way the psychedelic drugs could have attributed to the stroke?
No.
How do you know?
Well, it's...
You said no so firmly, yeah.
The stroke came after... years and years after I finished with the strong psychedelic drugs, the stroke was from a heart condition.
I understand. So today, would you recommend to spiritual seekers or to our youth to go towards psychedelics, to go towards a guru, or to go within?
Well, I recommend that people do what they intuitively do, and they must follow their own intuition. And I personally recommend guru, but then now gurus aren't like my guru.
And can you let our audience know what was the message that Maharaji gave you to carry throughout the world? What was the message that he told you to continue on in your mission in life?
Well, he said, tell the truth. And he also said, love everybody. And that was something I couldn't do. And I had to do, because if he told me to do it, I had to do it.
And why do you think that you couldn't do it? What was the block you were experiencing at the time?
The ego and the judge up in my head. I love that person, and I love this person, and that's all judging stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I was holding to. I think he was suggesting that I identify with my soul instead of my ego.
So how would you tell someone who is very judgmental in their life to calm that judgment down? What type of advice would you give to someone like that?
Well, I'd probably get them to attend to the middle of their heart space, the middle of their chest, and there, I'd say their awareness in there and love. And so then I'd say, starting at the ego, which is up in the head, the ego is based on fear, and then the ego is we think we are, and then start in by saying, I am loving awareness.
Hmm.
I'm living awareness. And go from the head down through the heart. And I am loving awareness. I am loving awareness.
Hmm. So, you know, I would love to ask you about what you think of the modern day shaman. Is there such a thing?
Well, Western values permeated the world, and there aren't many people that are gurus or shamans that are free of Western values. That means that they're not free of money, and they're not free of sex, and things like that.
Or free of the ego, really, truly. Do you think that...
Absolutely right.
Was Maharishi really free, completely free of his ego? Was he an egoless person?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And have you ever reached that state?
No.
No, yeah. Of being limitless. Do you think that the ego serves us in certain ways, keeps us safe in certain ways?
It serves us by the ego as a servant, in this physical plane and the psychological plane. I think that there is use for the ego, and the ego is God. The one put the ego where it is, and we got caught in it, and we don't have to get caught in it.
Can I ask you about your experience with Oprah when she came to interview you for the Super Soul Sunday show? What did you experience during that interview that you wanted to accomplish with that interview?
Well, I wanted to convey love to her audience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she conveys love to that audience, which was, I think, the interview with really did that.
Mm-hmm. Really did. Really showed that love is something that we have lost a little bit of as a community. So how do you, Ram Dass, suggest that we get back to that place of love? What are we missing? What do we need to get closer to?
We get closer to our souls, to our inner heart. Each one of us is a transmitter of love and compassion and peace. And if we can go inside to the real love and compassion and peace within us, we are able to radiate that to other people. And it goes from heart to heart to heart.
What about when people do things that hurt us or there's wrong being done in the world? How do we get back to that place of love and compassion when there is so much injustice being done all around us?
Well, you still radiate those positive things. That's what you can do in when the world is as it is. I don't think you have to involve yourself with other people's karma, but it is important to see them as souls and see them as having these things like love and compassion and peace in them. So you don't see them as their roles, but see them as their soul.
How can you see someone like Hitler's soul?
Well, there we have a soul who's taken a lousy incarnation.
Or maybe the soul was taken.
No, the soul had incarnations before that, and then this was his karma.
Yes.
And I think you end up feeling sorry for compassion for the soul who's had to get into this mess. His incarnation, he's going to reap terrible karma.
Yes, and I guess there's no way to really even explain that to the Holocaust survivors or those who lost loved ones during the Holocaust.
Well,
is there any way to explain that?
It's pretty difficult.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult. How do you explain karma, by the way? How do you explain that? Do you believe that we reincarnate and we are reincarnated from our past souls?
Yeah. Yes, I do. And I think that the karma is the result of motivated actions. When you do something out of attachment or out of fear or things like that, you are generating karma.
So how could we essentially live our lives differently if we were to say there was empirical evidence proving that karma existed, that we come back again to learn our lessons? How do you think we would live differently now? Do you think that people would really live differently if we knew for sure we were going to come back to relearn our lessons?
Well, certainly I've met people in India who see that as certainty, and they are a compassionate and loving people. This is in the country or the villages, and and they have to fulfill their roles as the sweeper or the school marm or something, and they play the roles without getting caught in them, and they are souls which have the soul is karma. The soul travels incarnation, and they are seeing this life as one of a series of reincarnations. And I see my life as that much.
Do you? Do you see your life as that way?
Yeah. This is just in process.
And what do you think you're a reincarnation of? What is it that you're here to learn?
Well, I've learned about my heart.
Mm.
I've learned to be dependent on the other people.
Ah.
I've learned that I'm not my body, but my body has a stroke, but I am. I don't have a stroke.
Mm.
And I've learned that I'm free of time and space.
Wow.
I've learned that we as humans have infinite resources. I've learned that from my guru.
Infinite, that we are infinite sources?
Infinite resources.
That we have within us infinite resources, yes.
Infinite time, and you can conquer space. My guru appeared in two places at once.
Oh, I have to ask you about that, yes. Can you tell me what you know about parallel universes and creating things in at the same time, or being in splitting your focus and your attention and basically being in two places at once? I know that you've spoken with Wayne Dyer about this, and he told me that you had a nice, wonderful, long afternoon talk about it.
Well, we humans are capable of more than one consciousness. And when you are in two consciousnesses, you can be in two places at once.
How do you do that?
How do you do that?
Mm.
Well, for example, I'm in my ego, and at the same point, I am in my soul, and I'm besides that, I'm in the one. That would be three
places at once.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can we use the concept, it's not even a concept, it's a feeling of being in multiple places at once. Can we use that to go into our future in terms of setting an intention for a particular outcome, maybe, for it to be a positive outcome, a good experience, a healing of a disease or an illness?
The future is thought forms. I don't know anything about the future that aren't thought of by me. And I'd say if you could manipulate your thought forms of the future, you get healed. For example, Wayne's new book,
Wishes Fulfilled. Yes.
Yeah, that's that kind of thing.
That's that kind of thinking where you create your intention into the future.
Yeah.
Huh. Of course, you wrote the book Be Here Now and Be Love Now. So you create within the moment, within the now, right?
Yes.
Your consciousness lives here lives now with you and I.
Yes, I'm really here now.
Do you ever set intentions into the future for things to happen, or do you just show up into that moment and allow what happens to happen?
That's what I do.
Uh-huh.
Because I don't really think about the future at all. I mean, I think about death, but that's now. Now and death and life are all mixed up together in now. And I'm 81, and the future seems kind of uninteresting. I'd rather...
Now, that's interesting, yes. But for you, at 81, that makes sense. But what about for a college student?
In a worldly sense, they better concern themselves future.
I see. I understand. So it's okay for them to concern themselves with the future. What about us concerning ourselves with the future of our world?
We can concern ourselves with the mess we're now in, and that pays off in the future.
Explain that. By doing something about it, by being concerned about it now? So that causes us to go into action, doesn't it?
Yeah, but that, or non-action.
Compassion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's wonderful. In your book, Be Loved Now, that's basically what it's about, right?
Yeah.
If we were to get wrapped up in, there are many organizations that are concerned with conspiracy theories and secret societies and alien activity. Do you think that that type of information can be dealt with, and that type of fear can be dealt with compassion?
Yes, that you know the institution that works in the society is the person. It's the one. Like, I can go to a peace rally and I can feel the peacefulness, the peace of the world is getting troubled by the rally, and I can radiate peace and I can work on the peace of the world.
In terms of questions from the audience, there's questions coming in here, and I'm going to go to the phones in just a second. The phone number here is 818-985-KPFK. Ram Dass and Rameshwar Dass are my guests on The Aware Show, and we're talking about the latest book of the trilogy, basically. The first one was Be Here Now. The second one was Still Here, and Be Loved Now is the third. And I want to go through the phones here. I believe this is AJ in Los Angeles. Do you have a question for Ram Dass?
Yes. Hi, Lisa, and greetings to your honored guest.
Thank you.
My question is, as far as the concept of we are all one, I think many people in the West, that's kind of a tough one to grasp. So can your guest help us understand more what exactly that means, how we can implement that in our lives, and lastly, if we do implement that in our lives and accept that, what might be the effect of that viewpoint? Thank you.
The first thing one does is one goes down into the soul and then looks around and sees that everything is one. Even to say everything is a manifestation of the one, or you can say that science has proven that there's one, all things are made up of one, and so you see the one, and then that's not the final stage of consciousness, because the final stage of consciousness is what the one Maharaji, our guru, has, and that is merging with the one. And in that case, there is a certain help you need from one consciousness.
Is that outside help that you're talking about, or inner guidance that you're talking about?
Well, it actually comes from the one is inside you. It's you start looking in your soul, and you will get the God within. And as
I understand,
it's in the in Hinduism it's called the Atman, and Ramana Maharshi, a saint in India, says God, Guru, and Self are in that place one. Then you identify with a tree you might look at. Then you are the tree. You are the clouds. You are.
There's no separation any longer.
No.
Do you have a final thought for us, or a final prayer for humanity that you could leave us with?
Humanity is one.
Humanity is one.
And in each of us is the solution to humanity's ills. Inside of us is compassion, is love, is wisdom, and is joy.
Mm-hmm. In each of us is the solution. Yes.
And peace. And all they've got to do, if people go inside to where we are all one and act from that place, from that perception, they will have a better world.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your wisdom and your guidance, and for reminding us about what really true love and compassion is, and for your timing and allowing us to be here and to be present with you. And I really appreciate your time, Ram Dass. Thank you so much for being with me today.
And I want to thank you for just allowing me to contact all the hearts that you have before you.
Oh, yes, and they have all connected with your blessing. I can feel that. Thank you. To sit with you has been an honor. I am in deep gratitude. Thank you, Ram Dass.
Namaste.
Namaste. Oh, chills have just gone down my entire body. And until next time, I invite you all to stay aware.